Welcome to Writer, Pants on Fire, the podcast where authors talk about things that never happened to people that don't exist. I'm your host, Mindy McGinnis. You can check out my books at www.mindymcginnis.com and the Writer, Pants on Fire blog at www.writerpantsonfire.blogspot.com. Today's guest is fellow YA author Kate Carius Quinn. Kate is the author of Another Little Piece, Don't You Forget About Me, and Down with the Shine. We talked a little about her querying journey, how to deal with the often sour grapes of life as an aspiring author, and also tackled the nasty truth about professional jealousy. One of the things that I always want to talk to my guests about is their querying journey and how they landed an agent, because I think that there's a lot of misconception out there. For aspiring writers, they're looking for a shortcut and a quick fix and some kind of magical trick in order to get an agent, because the querying process is so very difficult. And so I wanted to ask you, how did you get your agent?
Well, basically, it was a magical trick. No.
Okay. Just magic. Okay, cool. Great. Next question. No.
Yeah. I think when you're first starting out, if someone tells you, like, it's going to be that hard, you just don't want to hear it. Like, I remember I was in film school and I was writing my first screenplay and somebody said, like, oh, everyone's first screenplay sucks. And I was like, no, mine doesn't. And it did. Right. It did. But like, you can't tell someone something they're in the middle of writing sucks. And I've heard people say that about like first novels too. Like everyone's first novel sucks. And it's like, you can't write a whole book. Like a whole book takes a lot of energy and you can't be writing it being like, well, this sucks, but it's just practice. That's not motivating. And some people do sell their first books and some people sell their first screenplay. So, you know, you could be one of the ones that hits it out of the park. Do we have a sound effect? A hitting it out of the park sound effect?
Oh, yeah, we do.
I'm just going to try and work in all the sound
effects. Work in all of them.
So, yeah, I think you can be. But, I mean, I wasn't. My first novel I wrote was a romance novel. I loved it and I thought it was great, or I thought it was like at least as good as like other things that were out there that were on the shelf that I was reading. Like, you know, when you go to the bookstore and you get a book and you're like, I could write something at least as good as this because this sucks. <You
know>? Yes. And that's very true. It's a really interesting point that you bring up, because it can be either motivating or it can be really debilitating, because you can read a book that you think is terrible and is published and think, well, then why aren't I? And you can get really sad and go home and drink your gin, or you can say, I don't drink gin, or you can say, say, okay, I'm better than that. So, or I believe I'm better than that. So they made it. That means I can too. I think it's important for aspiring writers to realize that that never stops. Even once you're published, you will see other books that you don't necessarily think are amazing that are doing phenomenally in sales.
Obviously, your cup of tea may not be somebody else's cup of tea. Like, well, that's garbage and those people are stupid. Well, you know, whatever. Somebody else likes that.
As you know, I worked in a high school library for 15 years until just very recently. And there were books that I thought were terrible. There was a particular series that I really did not care for, and it hooked readers, especially young boys. I mean, reluctant readers, boys, I would say, you know what? And it was my go-to. I did not like the book, but it didn't matter. I could hand that to a kid and it would turn them into a reader.
Like, I think we both don't think 50 Shades of Grey is very good. But, you know, that book, so many people read it, and I think it brought a lot of people to read a book who had maybe hadn't read a book in years to read a book, and then, you know, they're going to read more books. So, you know, any type of book, or like, I think Twilight was a big book like that. Like, you see so many bloggers who say like, oh, I didn't read, and then I started reading Twilight, and then I got hooked into the whole YA book thing.
Yes.
Like, whatever you think about Twilight, that's are readers. Amazing.
Yes. Yeah, no, so, agreed entirely. Twilight kind of gave birth to YA as we know it today. So I never bang it, because it's I would probably not be published, and you probably would not be published either, or many of our constituents, if it wasn't for Twilight.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, and I agree with you completely about 50 Shades of Grey, because that summer, you know, I'm at the pool hanging out, and it's like I'm reading, I was reading Les Mis, you know, and everyone else is reading 50 Shades of Grey. And, you know, I got into these conversations with them, and there were women that were like, I haven't read a book in 20 years. They would say, can you recommend something else? Because I want to read something when I'm done with this series, and I'm blowing through them, and now I'm addicted to reading. And I'm like, that's awesome. When you're an aspiring author, it can be hard to see things that you don't feel are quality succeeding. Those books and those sales are making money for their publishers, and their publishers can use that money to take a chance on an unproven author like you.
That's right. And even though they don't, you know, necessarily inspire you, and, you know, you feel like your book is better, those aren't the books to look at when you're writing. Like you said, those are like a good thing to look at when you're putting on your like marketing hat and saying like, mm-hmm. why are these in the market? What do they do? But I think the better thing to do when you want to be inspired is to go to the bookstore and find those books that you love, that you are reading it, and you, one part of you is like, oh my God, this book is so good. Nom, 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 mm-hmm. nom. And the other mm-hmm. half of you is like sobbing, I will never write anything this good ever in my entire life. That's what you want your book to be as good as. You don't want your yes. book to be like, oh, it's better than this crap book that I don't like. You want right. to aim for your book to be as good as this book that you think is beyond your reach, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. I think I've told you this before, but that's how I felt about your book when I read Another Little Piece for the first time when I got the ARC in the mail. How Kate and I even met was we are members of a group called the Class of 2K13, which was a group of debut YA and middle grade authors who got together, and we helped support each other and promote each other's books. So we read each other's books before publication, and I got Kate's ARC in the mail of her debut, Another Little Piece. I was reading it as a reader going, oh my God, this is so awesome. It's 2 a.m. I am so happy. And then my writer side is going, you will never write as good as Kate. You should quit now. And I'm thinking, oh man, when Kate reads my book, she's going to be like, how was this published?
That's how I feel a lot when you send me your first drafts and I'm reading them and I'm like, fuck Mindy, this is a first draft. Like when you sent me Madness, those first 100 pages that you were then going to cut, but then you didn't. But anyway, so that's a whole different story. But anyway, I was just like, oh my God, this is so fucking good.
We should just spend the next hour complimenting each other. That would be cool. We really should.
Great listening. Who wouldn't want to hear that?
Our moms will love this podcast.
Yes. Number one podcast among Kate and Mindy's mom.
Coming up next, Kate and I talk about things that can be hard to believe. Rejections can give you hope. More than one agent offering to represent you is incredibly stressful, and the life of a published author is not all wine and roses. Things can go wrong in a published author's life. In fact, that agent you were so ecstatic to have landed may not be the perfect fit. Or you may get some reviews that say, you're not funny. More on that next.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Another Little Piece and your other books?
So Another Little Piece was, as you said, my debut. So I wrote a romance novel for adults, was my first book, and I queried it, okay. and that died pretty quickly. And then I decided to write an urban fantasy, and this was back.
Were you about 5 years too late?
I was, yeah. I was writing that, and it was kind of a mess of a book. And I got an agent who was kind of interested, and she gave me a revise and resubmit. And so I revised and I resubmitted it, and she was so nice, and we talked on the phone. And so after I did the revise and resubmit, she called me and we talked again, and she had more notes, and she wanted me to revise it again and resubmit it, which was like, wee, this is exciting. I'm talking to an agent, even if she isn't my agent. So I revised it again, and then I sent it back to her. She eventually got back to me, and she said, and I will always remember this, and I mean, I still have the email saved in my mailbox somewhere, but I remember it. I don't even have to go back to it. And she said, I feel like I'm torturing you at this point. My heart kind of sunk because that did not sound like an offer was coming, and it was not. She said, I feel like this book, it's not coming together. You're kind of just getting farther away from it. And she said, sometimes you have to write a book that doesn't work, then move on to something else, and it will be the next one. And she said, you know, I really think you're talented and I want you to query me again with your next book. At that point, I already was writing my next book. And that was another little piece because at that mm-hmm. point, I was getting really into YA because YA was so hot. And so I'm like reading all these young adult novels and I'm like, holy crap, young adult is amazing. You can do so much. You can swear. You can have sex. This is awesome. Like, it's not like some like after school special, like.
Right. The plot isn't, awesome. I found a puppy and I have to hide the puppy in my basement because I'm not allowed to have a puppy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even though it was a rejection and it was definitely like a heart sinking moment, it was also encouraging because she like said, like, you're talented and I want to, you know, read this next book. So I was like, okay, I got to finish this book so I can query her. I queried that book for about a month. That agent who said that, she was the first to offer. And then I think I had like 3 or 4 more offers.
Which is amazing.
Which is amazing. It's like the dream, but I actually hated it because I'm...
Because you have to choose.
especially as I get older, I'm like getting like so high strung and neurotic. And I'm like, or maybe I'm just like recognizing it more. Like I just used to be like, oh, that's just how people are. And then I'm like, oh no, that's how I am. It was actually kind of hellish because I felt bad. Like, I mean, it's amazing. Like these agents who you like have been like the supplicant now switched. It's like someone hit a button and suddenly like you're living in the castle instead of mm-hmm. like banging at the doors and you get to be like, who will I choose?
I think it's really interesting. You were talking about a rejection that actually gave you hope. And I think that that's really important because I too had written an urban fantasy. Everyone was doing it, which means it's too late for you to do it if it's already the trend. Yeah, but we didn't realize that. So mm-hmm. I wrote my urban fantasy and I sent it out there and there was an agent. It was Jennifer Laughlin. You know, she's a big deal. She's a really big deal in the middle grade and YA agenting world. And she read it and she took a lot of time with it. And then when she emailed me back, she wrote me the nicest rejection letter. I mean, it was a rejection that mm-hmm. was so complimentary that it gave me the hope to keep on going. Just like you were saying, she said, you know, you are talented and I think you're going to make it. It's just not going to be this book. And to have someone inside this castle, as you were saying, that I had been mm-hmm. trying to get into at that point for 10 years, to have someone mm-hmm. say to me, I think you're going to make it, that I needed that. Like, even if mm-hmm. they weren't saying, I'm going to be the one to help you do it, they were saying, you're going to make it, not with this book. If she had not written me that rejection, I don't know if I would have kept going. I did have 2 agents offering to represent Not a Drop to Drink. And it sounds like such a first world problem, but it is. It's very stressful because it's a business relationship, but it's also an emotional relationship. It's kind of like getting married and you definitely want to make sure you're making the right decision.
Like you said, it's like a first world problem. Like when you're querying and you're like getting no nibbles on your query and people are like, oh, it's so hard to choose between multiple offers. You're like, oh, go to hell. I mean, it's the same thing when you're querying and like published authors are like, life is hard and you just want to like kill them. But it's not all wine and roses. It's like wine coolers and weeds.
Yeah, it's like boons and maybe some dandelions. Nothing's perfect, that's for sure.
Next up, Kate and I talk about the hated synopsis, the hoops you jump through during the query process, and the ever-popular pitch wars.
So I actually didn't end up choosing the agent who gave me the really nice rejection because my first agent, I never knew how to say her name, Machinist.
Machinist, I believe.
I think so, yeah. And she was with Jinkle and Nesbitt at the time, and she's just amazing. And I clicked with her on the phone, and it's weird. Like, you know, there were some of the agents I talked with, and I did not click with them. And mm-hmm. the agent who gave me the really nice rejection, like, she was definitely wonderful to talk to on the phone, too. And I just felt like Alexandra, like, she just felt like she wanted to hit the ground running with this. And, like, mm-hmm. she just seemed, like, very focused and all business. And I kind of feel like I'm, like, not all business. Zigzaggy and unfocused and not organized, and I was feel like she could be the yin to my yang, and I was like, I think this is gonna work. And then so I chose her. When I called her to accept the offer, she gave me notes right on the phone, like for some mm-hmm. edits to do, and I think that was like a Friday, and I did them over the weekend, and I sent the book to her on Monday, and she sent it out on Tuesday, And by the end of the week, we had an offer. So it sort of felt like, good decision making, Kate. That was perfect. Well done. Because, I mean, it was just amazing how fast it happened. So that was my debut. And it's about a girl who she's last seen at a high school party screaming and covered in blood. And then she disappears. And she's found a year later, miles and miles away from her home. And she has no idea who she is or where she's been for the past year. And so her parents come and they bring her back home, and she has this feeling like she is someone or something else. Dun, dun, dun. Do you have a dun, dun, dun sound effect?
I don't have a dun, I have this. I don't know.
No, it doesn't quite get that spooky feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like I'm kind of making light of a very serious problem. I love that book. It's so creepy. And something that I was jealous of as a writer, whenever I read your stuff, your other books as well, is that you are quirky isn't quite the right word. There's something very original about all of your stuff. Kate's other books are Don't You Forget About Me, and then her most recent release is called Down With The Shine, which I can't decide if it's my favorite or if it's just because it's so damn funny that I just love it. Why don't you talk about Down With The Shine?
Because we have the same sense of humor, Down With The Shine.
I think it is.
Some people find, because I read my reviews because I apparently hate myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you're a masochist, apparently.
Yeah. And some people think it's not funny at all. Like, some people are like, this humor is so juvenile. And I'm like,
I think it's actually very, very layered and clever. Oh, well. Anyway, go on.
It's very much my sense of humor. Like, I have, like, sort of a sarcastic sense of humor. I don't know. Maybe it's, like, growing up in a cold weather area thing. Like,
I'm really interested to see where you're going to go with this.
I feel like it just makes you the type of person who, like, walk out in the morning to get on the bus and it's, like, fucking freezing. And you're, like, you know, walking through snowdrifts and you're, like, this is awesome. Like, sometimes people will be, like, oh, your kids are so cute. And I'll be, like, eh. Yeah.
Yeah, and see, you know, I think that's hilarious. So
yeah, see, I'm like,
obviously we both grew up in cold weather, so
I mean, I'm not saying it's a good joke. I'm not saying it's an especially clever joke, but it's just like a haha. Humor is very subjective. But other people didn't like that it's like, it's funny, it has parts of funny, but then it also has parts that are really, really dark. But again, that's my sensibility. That's like my sense of humor.
I think it's also very, very hard to execute on the page because you don't have any of the of film and you don't have any of the discrete, the small body language, you know, anything that can inform the joke that makes it funny. You've been stripped of that. You just have text. You just have black on white. I think writing humor is very, very difficult. I think it's much easier to make someone cry than it is to make them laugh.
Yeah, so I attempted humor, and some people felt it was successful, and some did not. You know, it has a little bit of like a Buffy vibe, I guess you could say, and I'm a huge Buffy the Vampire Joss Whedon fan. And
Why don't you talk a little bit about the premise for The Shine?
So Down With The Shine is about a girl in high school. Her uncles make moonshine. And her best friend recently was killed, murdered, quite gruesomely. Her father is kind of this criminal, and so people think that she, like, is somehow to blame or had something to do with it. And so sort of it's this, like, giant fuck you and last hurrah. She decides to crash the biggest high school party of the year and bring some of her uncle's moonshine. So they do this toast before someone has a drink of shine, and they say, you know, make a wish. And then the person says a wish, any wish they want to make. And then they say, may all your wishes come true, or at least just this one. And so she passes the moonshine around the party, and she makes everyone do this toast. And of course, they're like a bunch of drunk teenagers, and they make a bunch of crazy, drunken, silly, stupid, whatever wishes. The next morning, she finds out that her uncles actually, they don't make moonshine. They actually grant wishes, and all those wishes come true. It unleashes chaos, and Lenny has to fix it, and wackiness ensues.
Yes, it certainly does. Meanwhile, with the subplot of the gruesomely murdered friend. Now, you also have switched. You have switched agents at one point in your career. So do you want to talk about what that process was like?
The worst thing ever. I agonized over it for the longest time, and in talking with other authors and like being an author group, you see a lot of people go through this. You start to feel like maybe your relationship with your agent isn't totally copacetic.
Well, and much like the divorce rates, it is common for authors and agents to break up.
But you don't really know that. Everyone celebrates when they get a new agent, but nobody's like, I broke up with my agent. Woo!
Right.
And it wasn't that my agent was bad. I mean, I think she's a terrific agent and we were not a good fit in the end. And I think I think she's more someone who is like better on the phone, and I'm a person who does not want to be on the phone. So
I'm similar with that. And I don't know if it is so much an introvert thing. You know, I think it's a people who grew up in cold weather thing, because I go through this with my editors. They'll say, here's your edit letter and, you know, feel free to call me and we can chat about it. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I will send you an email that is like 2 pages long and we can sort it out that way. I don't like talking on the phone because, and I think a lot of the time it's because I need something to reference back to. If we have a conversation about your notes on my manuscript, I am not going to remember it. I'll be jotting down notes while we're talking and I will look at them later and say, I don't know what this is. I can't, my handwriting is horrible. I would so much rather just be exchanging ideas back and forth in a written form that I can reference later as I'm working.
I agree. I mean, I do sometimes see value in like talking on the phone and like you can bounce ideas back sort of on the fly and stuff. But I totally prefer like to write like the 3-page email and then get notes back too. And
me too.
Also, it lets me like gather my thoughts, think things through and not just kind of be scrambling and then like think of like 20 things after the phone call. And this is actually, I'm realizing it as we're talking, I don't think we've ever talked on the phone. Like we've met many times.
No, I don't believe we have.
And we email a lot and we've texted a lot, but I would never pick up the phone and call you.
Maybe that's just a writer thing. We're just like words that are visible much better.
Yeah. So we just weren't a good fit. And that's really...
It's common.
Yeah. And so I called her and I broke up with her and I just said, I'm sorry. It's not you. It's me. I mean, and it was, like I said, I really think she's a great agent. And I actually even had somebody, another author who was choosing between agents, talk to me like a month or two after I broke up. She was considering Alexandra and I talked to her and I was told her like everything. And, you know, I said the same thing to you. Like, I think she's a really, really great agent. And I think she ended up going with Alexandra. I sort of flailed around for a while after that. And I went back to the one agent who had offered for me, the one who gave me the R&R and then offered for me. And so I went to her and I kind of hoped that she would just be like, yes, I'll be your agent. I didn't have a full novel at that point. So I sent her like a bunch of like things that I'd been working on and it took, you know, a while for her to get through it. And then she got back to me and we had a conversation and basically she said, none of these things are like super great. I mean, it was way more nuanced than that. I think we talked on the phone for over an hour and she was like, she just had thoughts about everything. And I was kind of like at a point where I was like, I don't really know where I want to go with my career, what I want to do next. Because I'd already sold Down with the Shine at that point. Alexander sold Down with the Shine. You know, I was kind of like, I want to go in a different direction. And I was thinking about maybe writing some adult stuff or sci-fi. And so I had like tons of different things and everything was like in very early stages, which I'll admit when my work is the most unfocused, you can see lots of potential, but I don't really know where it's going yet. And she was like, you know, we talked about different things and what I could work on and kind of polish and have something. After that, I was sort of like, oh, I don't know what to do. And I was like so creatively blocked because I just, like I said, I was flailing around and then it was like the new year and I started writing. I just had this, oh my gosh, moment, light bulb. And I started writing something and it was a sci-fi thing. And it was like the first thing that I was excited about writing in like a really long time. And I wrote so many words in like a really short amount of time. And I think I sent it to you. And
yes.
And so it sort of evolved into the sci-fi space opera thing. I think I had like 50 to 100 pages and I sent it to this agent and I didn't hear back. And then I was like talking to you and talking to other people and they were like, you should not put all your eggs into one basket. You need to query other agents. So I queried a bunch of agents. I eventually got an offer from Susie Townsend of New Leaf and we talked on the phone and she was amazing. And we just totally clicked. And she's such a book lover. She represents adults and she represents young adults. I eventually decided to go with her.
Mm-hmm. And she's a good fit for you too, because you are interested in writing adult as well, and writing romance, yes, and writing sci-fi, and just kind of across the board and doing some genre jumping. She's going to be really supportive for you in that. And that's a really, really important thing. I mean, obviously, you know, I genre jump, mm-hmm, and my agent has always been supportive of that and said, you know, if you write a good book, I will find a home for it. It sounds like that's exactly what you needed, and you found that in Susie, and it was a good fit. So we talked about the queering process, and we talked about how myself and most of the authors that I know who are published, if not all, definitely most, did get their agent through the queering process. I know that a lot of aspiring authors are intimidated by that process. I was queering for 10 years, but that was my own fault. I did not want to do it right. I didn't want to do the work. I wanted to be, you know, the solitary author in their tower writing amazing books and throwing them down to the populace, and they gather the pages up and say, some agent comes along and is like, this is amazing, right? And it doesn't work that way.
There are those like one in a bazillion stories that you hear, and I think those give everybody the wrong idea. Did you also say recently in an email that you had JPEGs inserted into one of your manuscripts?
Oh God, yes, I did. I was trying to illustrate like some symbols that were on a piece of pottery. And so I put JPEGs in my manuscript, and I also inserted like, oh my gosh, like I whipped out Microsoft Paint and was like, making the symbols and stuff and putting them inside my Word document, which was just, oh wow. I mean, you don't do that. I had workshopped my query enough that my query for this book was good. The book itself was not. I was making that mistake as well. And I had an agent respond and say, you know, I'd like to see the full. And I'm like, awesome. And she had very specific parameters on how she wanted the full, because she would read it on her Kindle or her Nook. I forget which one. And I sent it, and I'm like, well, by the way, there's about 10 pages where there's a bunch of JPEGs and some Microsoft Paint art. And she's like, yeah, could you maybe take that out? Because it's not going to work on my Nook. It's a huge rookie mistake. I hadn't processed the fact that those things matter. Mm-hmm. Making sure that you have your query formatted correctly, making sure that you are following the agent's directions. Don't have an attachment on an email. Everything goes inside, you know, whatever. And some people are the opposite. You feel like you're jumping through hoops and that they are very arbitrary, but they're not. They matter. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing I think it's so important for aspiring authors to not make the mistakes that I made. And that's part of the reason why I run the blog and why I do this podcast, is because I messed up so bad. I mean, just terribly. Yeah. For 10 years, I did things wrong. And it wouldn't have taken me that long if I would have bothered to do the work. Yeah. And so the query process does work. It's very painful. It can be. I mean, I cried when I got my first rejection. I remember that.
I definitely cried the most over my first book. Like, my first book was like the one that I like shed the most tears. Because you have the highest hopes with that first book. You're like, I did it. I wrote a book. That's it. Yeah. I'm getting published. And then, you know, like you get a couple nibbles on the query and you're like, this is it.
Right.
You know, next stop, Barnes and Noble. You slowly get crushed. And I remember crying over that book. And my husband was like, I'm so sorry. Like, you worked so hard. You deserved it. And now I look back and I'm like, I hadn't worked hard yet at that point.
Mm-hmm. It's true. You think that writing the book is the hard part. And it can't. I mean, it is. Yeah. It's hard. But that's only like a third of the first third of the journey. I know that it's really disheartening. I just always think it's important to do your homework, which is such a boring, horrible thing to tell people.
Like, there's a wealth of information on the internet now. Everything is on the internet. It's free. You just have to put hours and hours of your time in. Read until your eyes are bleeding. That's when you know you're getting close, when there's actually like bloody tears coming down your face.
Yes. When you've contracted Ebola, you're close. Yeah.
When you're looking through the now defunct Miss Snark's website and reading her examples of how to write a synopsis, and you're reading every single one of them. I still remember doing that. Like, I was like trying to crack the code on synopsises, which I still have not done.
My agent Adrian, she required a synopsis. And for the longest time, I was so scared to write a synopsis because they are mind numbing. Mm-hmm. And I specifically only queried agents that did not require a synopsis because I didn't want to put the work into writing one. I was limiting myself, you know, mm-hmm. and I finally had to say, okay, Mindy, buck up.
Yeah. I went through the same thing.
The driver's seat and write your freaking synopsis. And no one expects a synopsis to be titillating. I mean, they are dry and boring mm-hmm. by nature. The point of a synopsis is to show that you have an arc. You have a beginning, you have a middle, and you have an end. So what sites did you visit when you were learning about agents and writing queries?
Oh my gosh, I can't remember everything. Like, I was on like a lot of message boards. I went on to a lot of blogs. All the agent blogs were amazing. So many of them, they'll post like successful queries, or they'll do like Q&As or various things like that. And that was just, it was priceless, because that is who you are targeting. And for them to say like, this is what you're supposed to do, this is what I'm looking for. Query Shark, Janet Reed, her blog was amazing. I've heard that she's amazing in person as well. To people who've met her at conferences, they say she's brilliant. Mm-hmm. If you just read agent blogs and read all the agent blogs and like went through their archives, you could spend several weeks gathering that information. That information is so important. You can go to forums and try and make friends and find people who are going to help workshop your query, because that's so important. Yes. You know, we did PW together, Pitch Wars.
Yes.
And I've done it. I did it by myself the year before I did it with you. And then I did it again this past year with Demetria Lunetta. You're seeing what agents see. You're seeing the query letters, and you're seeing the first several pages of a manuscript. And without even reading a single word, just opening the email and looking at their query, just the way it looks on the page, and then opening their manuscript and looking at it just the way it looks on the page, you already mm-hmm. know so much. Have you ever heard that story about, I think it's Led Zeppelin, they had a rider in their contract that said no brown M&Ms. It was a story that went around like, oh, rock stars are such divas, they can't eat the brown M&Ms. But mm-hmm. it actually wasn't that. It was something that they put in their contract so they could walk in on the day of the show and they'd look and see that bowl of M&Ms was in their dressing room. And if it had brown M&Ms in it, they would say, these people did not read the contract carefully. And if they're not paying attention to these small little details, then how do we know that all the different stuff on stage was done exactly the way it was supposed to be done? It was a quick way for them to see, like, if they were paying attention, if they had done their homework. You can see that exact same thing, because sometimes I'll open it and the query will be 6 paragraphs long. And I'm like, nope, mm-hmm. you are doing all the things that if you had done the slightest bit of homework, you would know not to do. Or you open that manuscript and it's single spaced, or it's all in bold, or there's a picture of a map.
It's in Comic Sans.
Oh yeah, no, I haven't had that yet. Or you know what? I see people don't know how to format. Click on Microsoft Word, so it says don't put spaces between paragraphs of the same style, and so it's double spaced. Mm-hmm. There's an extra space between each paragraph, and it just makes it look weird. That's a small formatting thing, and if your writing is amazing, an agent isn't going to be like,
It's a good quick visual cue that you are a professional and that you're taking the querying process, formatting of your manuscript seriously, that you took the time to look into making sure that you're doing this right. And that means that you also probably know not to use too many adverbs.
You know not to have your manuscript start with someone having a drink or waking up in the morning or looking in the mirror.
Yep. Those are all those cliche pitfalls. And that's the kind of thing, like you're saying, that if you do even a couple hours of work, just scratching the surface online, you will learn how to do this correctly. And I relied very heavily on a website called agentquery.com, which is a mm-hmm. database of agents. And then there's a forum. And if it was not for that, I would never have succeeded, because I, like I said, and I can't hit it enough, I didn't want to do the work. And finally I said, okay, you're going to have to buckle down and write the query that isn't 600 words. It's 300 the way it's supposed to be. Not say, well, my book is so amazing, it can't be condensed into 300 words. If you're an amazing writer, you will put it in 300 words. For a little background, Pitch Wars, what that is an opportunity for aspiring writers to be paired with published authors such as Kate and myself. And as she said, our friend Demetria Lunetta partnered with Kate this year for Pitch Wars. Aspiring authors then are basically asking us to mentor them, and they send queries to us. Also, I believe, what, the first 10, 5 or 10 pages of their manuscript?
I think it's something first chapter or 10 pages.
Is it the first? Okay. So they send us a query and they send us a little bit of their manuscript, and then we choose who we're going to mentor through the process, basically the same process that an agent would use. And there's a small window when these are open. And I should mention it's on Brenda Drake's website if you are interested in trying this next year, brendadrake.com. The window usually opens up in August. So if it's something that sounds interesting to you, definitely check out Brenda's website, because a lot of people have found mentors and polished their craft and gone on to be published. You have a published mentee, right?
Yes, I do. Her book is coming out next month. I'm so excited for her.
That's awesome.
Danielle Mage's motto, her book is The Memory of Hidden Things. It's an amazing book. She's an amazing person. I love her. I mean, Pitch Wars is just, it's an amazing contest. Brenda Drake is a genius. She is tireless. I don't know how she does it. She runs several contests throughout the year. But Pitch Wars is kind of like, I think, the big contest. It's great for authors, especially who have been querying and they're not getting traction and don't know what's wrong, or they've been like, they're getting lots of hits on their query, but their manuscript is getting passed on. They want to fix that manuscript. And I mean, that's what we do. We do like an entire overhaul of the manuscript and a huge big rewrite. And then there's a showcase in November, and tons and tons of people find agents that way. I mean,
yes, they do.
Again, I don't think that's a shortcut, really. I mean, it feels like, woo, you get an agent, you get an agent, you get an agent. But these people have already put in a ton of work. You still have written a manuscript. You still have to have a query letter. I always ask for a synopsis, because when you are trying to assess a manuscript based on a query and several pages, it really helps to like have a synopsis and be able to be like, where is this going? And I don't care if it's well written. It does not matter to me at all. I just want to know what happens, basically, just what happens.
It's a great contest. I mean, it was important to me, even as an already published author at that point, to have the experience of knowing how an agent feels day to day, because Brenda opened up the querying window. How long is it open for? Is it for...
I think she changed it to make it shorter last time, but I think when we did it, it was maybe like 3 days or 4 days.
Okay. And we had hundreds and hundreds of queries. It was so many. And we found quite a few that we requested partials of and then fulls. And in fact, Kate and I were unable to narrow it down to one. We ended up having two mentees because there were two that neither one of us wanted to let go. It was very interesting to be on that side and understand that you can, as you were saying, see someone's level of professionalism as soon as you open up the email, as soon as you open up the query. And if I see that you've put in the work, and I feel agents probably feel similarly, if it's formatted correctly, if you followed my particular directions for how I would like you to approach the querying process, then they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt of actually reading what you put in front of them. It feels like they're asking you to jump through arbitrary hoops, but it's not. It's the brown M&M.
It is. It is. It really is important, because if you want to take up their time, and they're getting so many, then you have to put in the time and do the homework and know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Finishing up our conversation with Kate Carius-Quinn, we'll talk about how writing is a solitary endeavor, but finding a writer's group can ease your pain.
To finish things off here, do you want to talk a little bit about your writer's group?
We're called BANQUI, Buffalo Niagara Children's Writers and Illustrators. I am located in Buffalo, New York area, Western New York. We didn't really have like a huge presence here for children's writers. So Dee Romito and I, Dee is amazing. Definitely check her out online. She has a really great website. It's also a great resource for writers with lots of agent integrate tutorials on Scrivener as well. I actually met Dee on Twitter when I was doing a Lucky 13s chat, and the Lucky 13s was the big debut group for people who had books coming out in 13. And we used to do Twitter chats. So I was tweeting on that hashtag with a bunch of other lucky 13s, and Dee saw me and she said, "You live in Buffalo?" And I said, "Yeah." And she did too. And so we met up for coffee and we got to be friends. And then we ended up driving together to a conference in Cleveland where Dee was attending and I was actually doing a presentation with you. That was super fun. We talked in the car driving there and we were like, why doesn't Buffalo have a conference like this? We worked together and we put together a conference first. And then out of that first conference grew Binkwe, because so many of the people were like, yes, we would love to come to like a monthly meeting. And so now we have monthly meetings with our group, and we are constantly getting new people, and we have some adult writers. Like, it's not just focused on children. If you live in the Western New York area, definitely check us out. We are on the web. I think we're under Buffalo Niagara Children's, but you can Google like Buffalo Niagara Children's and you'll find our website, and we have a Facebook group too.
I think it's a huge help. My high school reunion is 20 years. Yours is probably the same.
Yep.
Okay. So I was going through my Facebook page the other day because someone was saying, you know, we can't find everyone, and has anyone heard where so-and-so is, etc. So I was going through some of my Facebook friends, and it was amazing to me how many of my friends, like real friends, people that I talk to about all kinds of different things, not just work and writing, are writers now. It's its own support group, and you need that. You have to have it to survive. Is there anything you would like to plug as far as your social media follows, or a website or anything like that, if people want to follow you?
Sure. You can follow me. I am Kate Carious Quinn, wherever you might look. I am at Kate Carious Quinn on Twitter. My website is www.katecariousquinn.com. I'm on Instagram.
Kate does manuscript critiques, correct?
Yes,
paid manuscript critiques. Yeah. And queries as well.
Yes, yes. I do queries as well. I would say I'm okay with query critiques, but I would say I'm much better with critiquing pages. And I'm not a query genius, but I can definitely tell you where you're going off the rails. I think I'm better with critiquing pages. I do the first 10 pages for $30, and I always start with a 10-page critique just to make sure it's a good fit for both people. You can find more information about that on my blog.
And that's Kate Carious Quinn, and the middle name is K-A-R-Y-U-S, and it's .blogspot.com.
Writer, Writer, Pants on Fire is brought to you by Mindy McGinnis. Music by Jack Corbel. To support this podcast for as little as $1 a month, visit patron.podbean.com/writer writer pants on fire. Tune in next week for another episode talking with writers about things that never happened to people that don't exist.